You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com, bringing you the freshest radio in Brooklyn since 2009. Hear directly from chefs to farmers, artists to architects, authors to brewers, and everyone in between. Check out all of our shows on our website or by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. The following program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery. Cane Vineyard and Winery supports Heritage Radio and the growing movement to change how Americans eat and how we think about our planet. For more information, visit www.cane5.com.
Hi, and welcome to A Taste of the Past. I'm your host, Linda Palaccio, on this half-hour journey through culinary history. And as we come to the end of summer, it's almost Labor Day here, there are state fairs and county fairs, not to mention baseball games. I would venture to say that during these months, one food item has been eaten probably more than any time in the other months combined. And whether you call it a frankfurter or a wiener, a wurst or a brat, and whether you take it with sauerkraut, mustard, relish, or pickles, you know what I'm talking about. It's the hot dog. The hot dog has a place in America that, the lowly hot dog, that is more exalted than any other food, even though it's the lowly hot dog. And my guest today is someone who's done a lot of research and a lot of eating, I might add, of hot dogs. And his name is Bruce Craig. And Bruce is a well-known food history and culinary history. He's the president and founding member of the Culinary Historians of Chicago. He is professor emeritus of history and the humanities at Roosevelt University. And he's written a wonderful book called Hot Dog: A Global History in the Edible Series by Reaction Press. Bruce, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great, thank you. And I'm very hungry for a hot dog right now. I'm thinking about all the different ways to eat a hot dog. You know, as I was thinking about reading through the book again and thinking about some questions to ask you on the history of hot dog, I noticed again that you separate two threads of your research into, number one, the tangible story of the hot dog, and number two, the cultural history. That's why I say this lowly food has such an exalted place in our society.
Right.
Tell me about that. Why did you, and why separate the research in that way?
Well, it just comes naturally because hot dog is such an integral part of American folk culture. So you just look at commercial jingles, remember? Hot dogs, apple pie, and Chevrolet,
yeah.
And all the advertising and marketing by sausage companies like Oscar Mayer, and I'm sure that there isn't a listener
right.
who can't sing the Oscar Mayer jingle
right.
To this day. And newspaper stories, its connections to baseball, other sporting events. If you just say to anybody, come on over, I'm having hot dogs, or free hot dogs at some event, people gather.
That's right.
It's, again, part in the fabric of our popular culture.
Well, I know there are a lot of myths surrounding the name hot dog and the actual history of the hot dog. And if you ask people what's an American dish, you know, hot hamburgers and hot dogs pop into their head. Is it really an American dish?
I'm sorry, what does that say about America?
What is the history? What is the true history of the hot dog? I mean, we know there are sausages in history, but
yeah,
I'm
having a hard time hearing you. It's our connection.
You trace the hot dog back for a long time. So can you give us, or at least the sausage and chopped meats, give us a history of the hot dog?
Well, there are two things to say about it. Initially, the name hot dog and the product itself. So the product itself is a sausage, clearly, which came to America from Germany with the great German immigration of the mid to end of the 19th century. Americans certainly made sausages. English settlers, but it wasn't the hot dog culture that sausage culture that the Germans brought. And their sausage culture is street food as well as eating it at home with an elaborate variety of them and considerable artisanship, as opposed to the kind of pork sausages that English people made at home on farms and might purchase in from local butchers. Germans ate it as street food, and they did in Germany, and they did here when they got here, and they associated it with their other paradigmatic food, which is beer. The two go together right away, and as soon as German immigrants settled in our cities, they set up beer gardens, because that's where German families went, and there beer and sausages go together. Served as street food, it became popular all over the country. I just read an account of in 1870 in Cincinnati of sausage sellers in an area there called Over the Rhine. That's the German area of town. Mm. A fellow going around with his tray of sausages, followed by a young boy carrying condiments, bread, that is to say a sandwich, and mustards for people to, you know, make literally a sausage sandwich. So that's what a hot dog is, basically. It's a sausage sandwich.
Well, and you talk about evidence that chopped meat and processed meat goes back as far as 20,000 years ago.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Okay, I'm sorry. Let's talk about the industry that this popular hot dog spawned. Obviously,
right.
Chopped meat was something that was done for thousands of years, but now it became a popular item and it had to be mass produced.
Correct. Well, that's the story of American food, isn't it?
Industrial
production. Americans are quite good at picking up on any trend instantly and turning it into a large profitable enterprise. And in the 19th century, that's the economy of scale, namely industrialized food production.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes together with meat. And Americans being carnivorous, meat production was ramped up during that century, the 19th century, especially in Chicago, among other cities. Cincinnati's another one, the famous Union Stockyards, which produced massive amounts of food, about 80% of America's meat in its heyday, culminating, as probably all your listeners know, in the jungle and the horrors of it. But at any rate, one of the byproducts of cutting meat were leftovers and scraps, and those were turned into sausages by major companies, Swift and Armour and Wilson and lots of others. So that's the industrial part of it.
Right. Well, you say byproducts. I mean, that's what always scares a lot of people, that the hot dogs were made with the trimming, not the trimming so much, but the byproducts.
Absolutely. And you can still buy hot dog sausages that way, but they have to be labeled by federal laws. So you can go into a store and find sausages made with snouts, lungs, liver, brain, ears. No, really. And that's actually what was in a lot of them in the early days.
And, of course, then modern industry also brought about the additives for curing them, because it took too long to cure them the normal way, right?
Yeah, that's correct. The technology developed to quick cures in the teens of the century, actually, because it takes a long time to cure a sausage in the proper way, you know, like a ham would. So they had to have quick cures, pumping them as they did with hams, as an analogy. And this led to nitrates, which are still in hot dogs, and they're not going to kill you, but you may not like them.
Certainly artificial coloring was in hot dogs. For a while, hot dogs got a bad rap.
Namely Red Dye number
two, from them.
Because Americans, being literal-minded, had to have Red Hots. So you had Red Dye, and you still do in the South, by the way. Only it's not Red Dye number two. It's other colorings.
Yeah. Well, when we talk about hot dog, of course, we also mean the bun. I mean, you can't have a hot dog without the bun. And
correct.
It didn't always exist that way, right?
The bun, going back to the story in Cincinnati in 1870, Germans always serve sausages with bread. In fact, it's unthinkable. It's like soup without bread. And but America turned it into the sandwich. I'm a chef friend of mine, and I often agree that America's greatest or worst contribution to world cuisine is the sandwich, because we eat everything fast, and that has spread around the world. And if you don't believe me, just go to any country and look at a McDonald's, right, or Burger King, or any
that's
of those
right.
other places. So that's what a hot dog is. It's a sausage sandwich to be eaten on the run. It's public dining from a variety of venues, stands, fixed places, but barbecues, you know, cookouts, picnics. It should be eaten on bread, but that's just an American way of doing it.
And so the invention of something to fit this unusual shape, we had to find a bun, if you will, that would fit this long shape of a dog. Right?
That's a positive feedback thing. the original shape of the hot dog is cylindrical, and the reason is because sausages are chopped meat or finely chopped meat, and they get very finely chopped, emulsified in the case of hot dogs, and put into natural casings originally. That means animal guts. And they're tied off at the end, so they're going to have a natural tubular shape of various sizes depending on the gut. And nowadays there are lots of other casings, or non-casings, as the case may be. And so it easily fits into a bun. The earliest evidence we have for a specially made bun for a hot dog is from Brooklyn, actually, probably in the 1870s. Hmm. And there was a baker who... he died around 1909 or so, in his obituary in the Brooklyn Eagle says that he made buns specifically for the sausages by 1906 called hot dogs, to be served at Coney Island. Mm-hmm. And those quickly became the standard. It's just a very easy way to do it.
Right. Well, now you mentioned by then the name hot dog was common. Where did the... or how did the name hot dog come to be?
Well, that's the other part of American popular culture. Like everybody else in the world, Americans like to make jokes about food and food names. So the hot dog is a joke name. And it refers to the mystery meat. Remember, we talked about scraps and other things that went into hot dogs from the big manufacturers. So we didn't know what was going in it, and the standard joke was, and the earliest evidence in so far in the United States is the 1830s, for jokes about dogs going into the butcher's sausage machines, sausage making. And this joke ran right through the 19th century. There's a song about it, which I have in that book, called Der Deitcher's Dog.
Oh, where is my little dog gone, right?
Pardon? Yeah, it's where is my little dog gone, which everybody knows, but they don't know the rest of it, which is that the dog went into your sausages. So this joke runs through to about sometime in the 1890s. The earliest evidence is now 1892, that somebody called the sausage a hot dog. And the earliest evidence just recently discovered is from a newspaper in Paterson, New Jersey. And so the word is the idea then spreads very rapidly all over the country. this joke word that the sausage is, in fact, might have dog in it, but hot dog. It sounds good, doesn't it? Hot dog.
Well, it certainly took. Let's put it that way. We're going to talk a little bit more about the more appetizing and delectable side of hot dogs after we take a brief musical break, and during that time we'll try to get our sound fixed up for you too. Okay? So hold on.
Oh, hot diggity dog, ziggity boom, what you do to me? It's so new to me. What you do to me? Hot diggity dog, ziggity boom, what you do to me? When you're holding me tight. Never dreamed anybody could kiss that away, bring me bliss that away. What a kiss that away, what a wonderful feeling to feel that away. Tell me, where have you been all my life? Oh, hot ziggity dog, ziggity boom, what you do to me? It's so new to me. What you do to me? Hot diggity dog, ziggity boom, what you do to me? When you're holding me tight. Never knew that my heart could go zing that away, ting-a-ling that away, make me sing that away. Said goodbye to my troubles, they went that away, ever since you came into my life. Oh, hot diggity dog, ziggity boom, what you do to me? It's so new to me. What you do to me? Hot diggity dog, ziggity boom, what you do to me?
Hi, we are back, and we're talking about hot dogs and the history of hot dogs with Bruce Craig. And Bruce, you said in your book that the hot dog in its bun is a platform for culture. Tell me a little bit about what you mean by that.
Well, if you go around the country, you'll see that there are regional styles, and even within regional styles, local styles of hot dogs. And I'll give you a couple of examples. There's, in New Jersey, a style called Italian hot dogs, and this was invented in the 1930s at a place called Rutz, Jimmy Buff's. And what makes it Italian is it has a grilled pepper on it and some potato, which is a really southern Italian Calabrese cooking style, on a hot dog in a bun, what they call a pizza bread, which is just a thicker crusted bun. And it was in the Italian community in Newark in the 1930s, and now has become quite a famous regional style. In other places, Chicago notably, there are a lot of condiments, fresh tomato, pickle, hot pepper, relish, bright green relish, onions, mustard, never ketchup, on the hot dog. And this comes about because of the proximity of Jewish hot dog sellers to Italian and Greek vegetable stands on the streets of Chicago, in a specific part of Chicago. And this is the case all around the country. People put their own stamp on it. It's probably one place that caters to one kind of community, like the Italian hot dogs, and then it becomes a local cultural phenomenon. And again, you'll find these all over the country, in different styles.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are, in fact, Chicago. You mentioned Chicago and the Vienna beef. I mean, the name itself says a lot. The Vienna beef being a very popular.
Well, yeah. The name was invented around 1896 after the Columbian Exposition, and the reason it's called Vienna is not because it's from Vienna. It's because the owners, the founders, were Jews from the Austro-Hungarian Empire. And everybody knew that Vienna was the center of good cooking, the best cooking. So if you want to give something a really good name to sound good, you know, like you'd call something a French bakery now, for example, then you would call it Viennese. And so they gave the name to this sausage company, which catered to the Jewish community in the South Loop area of Chicago, called Maxwell Street. So It's pretty interesting. It doesn't have much to do with real Vienna sausages.
Well, hot dogs do have quite a history of being sold from push carts or street vendor carts.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's a whole culture in itself, right?
I'm actually doing another book right now on the culture of hot dog stands, and I'm talking about that very subject. But it's a street food, really. It comes from the streets of the American cities and was sold to immigrant folk who had very little money. It's cheap food. It's like street food anywhere in the world. So it's cheap, mass consumption, and it has to conform to what people expect out of a food. It has to be familiar to them. So the Chicago hot dog was, and New York hot dogs, by the way, too, were all beef because many of their customers were Jews, and many of the makers were Jews, who, while maybe not religious when they came over or when they got here, still had the Jewish dietary laws in their cultural background.
Well, certainly we are familiar with the street vendors. Well, in New York, you can't go to a street corner without seeing a hot dog stand and the famous Sabret umbrellas. And
right.
But in other cities, it's not push carts so much, but they really are permanent stands. And this is something unto itself, too, these hot dog stands.
Yeah, and this has to do with local laws and local authorities' ideas of what's sanitary and what isn't. Studies were done in New York at the turn of the 20th century, 1906, 1909, by commissions to look at the sanitary conditions of these many stands that existed, and what they concluded was that the stands had better food than many of the restaurants. And the reason is because the vendors went straight to the produce market and got their food fresh right away and used most of it right that day. So there was very little that they had to keep, which is pretty interesting. And that kind of idea allowed hot dog stands, food stands, to remain in New York as opposed to other places. Chicago, for example, concluded just the opposite. And over the course of the 20th century, they put more and more regulations on street stands so that most of the hot dog places in Chicago, in fact, virtually all of them, are in fact fixed locations. They're not really stands.
Well, you were recently quoted in a New York Times article on push carts and hot dog carts. A new generation wanting organic foods, wanting, specialty hot dogs, or people complaining about the dirty water hot dogs.
Right.
I contend that dirty water gives it its flavor.
I've heard several theories about it, some of which are so vulgar I'm not going to tell you what they are. I agree with you. The dirty water dog is fine. It's not really dirty water. So it's like a hot dog. You're eating a dog. Well,
right.
Dirty water is not
that,
exactly
it's that accumulation
the name,
of the grease
term.
And
the sausage is kept in most of these places in heated and water for a relative very short time, actually, and the turnover is very fast. So it's I think it gives it flavor also. In fact, I prefer them to the flat griddled hot dogs and certainly the fried ones that you find in New York.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Well, now, you say you've also traveled around the world tasting hot dogs in other countries.
Yeah.
What were some of the most unusual preparations that you encountered?
Well, the Korea, for example. And, there was a place in New York that served hot dogs with bulgogi and Korean condiments on it, but unfortunately it closed. but there's another one, a Japanese hot dog place that's opened in New York recently. In Korea, they it's not so much what's on it. What they do is they take a hot dog and dip it in a batter with potato chunks, and that's deep fried and then kept on sticks. And you'll see them. Just go to Seoul, to the market, or any public place, and you'll see these all over the place. They're perfectly awful. So,
it's like the analog is a kind of fried fish
dish that the Koreans use. That's pretty unusual. In France, they take a baguette and hollow it out, and squirt mustard and, unfortunately, ketchup. As you can tell, I'm not a ketchup fan, at least for sausages. And then they stick the hot dog in it. So the end of it sticks out of this bun, this hole in the bun, which is pretty unusual. In South America, there are lots of iterations of them, many with mayonnaise on them. Hot chili sauces, some with chopped egg on them. And so those are just three of many that you can find internationally.
I know that a very popular type of hot dog in Germany, and this is post-World War II, I believe, is the currywurst.
Yeah, right. I've argued with my German friends about this. I'm not a fan. Because I think the curry is, the sauce is not very palatable. But it's a real German phenomenon. It comes from Berlin, and there's an argument as to who invented it, but it's post-World War II. And I remember Germans have a sausage culture. And you can't sell, for example, in Germany, something called a Nuremberger Wurst unless it comes from Nuremberg. It's DOC. Sausage is there. Pretty interesting. But this one is fast food, meant to be eaten quickly and to be spicier. And as German palates opened up after the war with Americans coming in and more immigrants suddenly coming into Germany, bringing a spicier flavor profile with them, the currywurst, I think, becomes popular. Again, it's not as popular as it was. And on the streets of Berlin, it's being replaced by Doner Kebab.
Oh. Well, the currywurst stand has just opened, actually, a restaurant has opened in New York.
I think I read about this.
The original Berlin currywurst, and it's on Bleecker Street. Have not tried it yet, however.
Well, so I can see how Americans would like it.
Mm-hmm.
We have lots of different. Whether it becomes popular, I'd be very surprised. Okay. I think that people are fairly conservative about their hot dog tastes. And while they will try new iterations, it has to be familiar. So I'm not sure that currywurst is going to make it. Now, if it were Mexican, with Mexican salsas and things, that might be different.
That's right. Well, you know, you still, even to this day, rarely do you go to any kind of reception or party where you don't find the little hot dogs, pigs in a blanket.
Yes, cocktail wieners, right.
And
these date from the early 20th century, mid-1920s, maybe a little before that. And they're just an appetizer. And those you can look at as a quick way to have fancier food for the masses. People then, as they are now, are reading food magazines, and want to impress their guests, want to have something fancy and nice, and what could be better than a little Viennese cocktail sausage? It's just an ongoing process in American food history that elite foods filter down to the to mass consumption, and something happens to them. I can give my favorite version of that would be chicken a la king.
Mm-hmm.
Which and all those creamed dishes, which are so popular in the last century, but those come from French sauces, bechamels, and all those, a whole variety of them. So right. I think cocktail wieners are one of those.
Yeah, well, any way you eat them, I think the hot dog is here to stay, and I don't think new trendy foods are going to displace it by any means. Because
no, to the contrary, hot dogs have become, may I say, chefized, that a number of chefs have taken up hot dogs and have worked them around to fancify them, making some very interesting creations. And so it's a trend. That's a trend at the moment.
Huh, interesting. Well, it's fascinating to realize there is so much history behind a food that we usually relate, associate with the ball game, you know, the baseball games and the county fairs.
That's true.
It's certainly a children's favorite, and adults have to admit it's their favorite, too. And I thank you so much for sharing all your information and research with us, and I look forward to reading about the pushcarts and what comes from them.
Oh, well, thank you for allowing me to talk at you.
Okay. So please join us again for A Taste of the Past, and we'll bring you another Journey Culinary History.
This is a message from Fork and Anchor. Aaron Fitzpatrick, the host of our wine program, Unfiltered, is looking for help on Kickstarter to open Fork and Anchor, a general store inspired by two food-loving ladies with an equal affection for urban life, the sea, and the agricultural paradise of Long Island's North Fork. The store is situated in a growing community of farmers and winemakers and will become a meeting place offering prepared foods, a variety of sun-dries, and a selection of homespun products, many of which will have their origins in New York State. Your backing will help them fulfill their dream of fostering relationships with the community and making the local food system accessible on a broader scale. Search Kickstarter.com for Fork and Anchor and donate today. The following is a message from NOFA NY. Do you dig local food? Love organic farmers? Do you crave to be part of a growing movement of consumers concerned with the state of our nation's food system? Then sign up today to take the NOFA NY's Locavore Challenge this September. Join 5,000 other New York locavores that are hungry, active, and ready to change our food system. Learn more at www.nylocavorechallenge.com.